You're listening to a podcast from catholicnews.org.uk.
Hello and welcome to our podcast. Now, we're taking on education as our theme today, which is very timely, because the 2012 Catholic Education Service Census is out. Now, we have plenty of up-to-date data on our Catholic colleges and schools, but we all struggle a little bit with facts and figures and stats, so we're going to need a couple of studio guests to help us out and explain everything. Firstly, I'm joined by Peter Irvin, CBE, who has painstakingly correlated all this data into the Census Digest. Now, Peter is a consultant to the CES and was Her Majesty's Inspector for 23 years. Is that right, Peter?
That's right, 23 years.
You're very welcome. And we're also joined by Greg Pope, who is the Deputy Director of the Catholic Education Service. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Peter, if I can start with you. I said painstakingly in the introduction. How difficult was it to compile all this data?
The system has become refined over the years, and so the way in which the data is collected and the return rate from schools help us in doing that pretty efficiently now. So there is no reason really why in future why we couldn't publish the digest within a matter of weeks of the conclusion of the data collection. All that stops us is the fact that the DfE and the World Assembly Government statistics are not published finally until July and September respectively.
Now, the first thing I notice is that 98% of schools and colleges responded, which must be encouraging and obviously gives better data.
It is very. It doesn't happen by accident. I mean, there are people who are on the phone very frequently to schools that haven't yet returned. And so congratulations to them for getting the highest return rate ever at 98%. So we're very pleased with that. It's not far off the national census figure.
Well, let's start with some of the key findings. I mean, it is difficult when you have sort of a good 50 pages or so to go through. So if you could boil down the sort of headline stats and facts and figures, that would be grand.
I suppose most significantly, the census emphasises that the Catholic system is a major partner in providing education in the country. So that 10% of all schools in England, both primary and secondary, are Catholic schools, and 10% of pupils educated in them. And the figures are slightly lower in Wales. They're around about 6-7%, both primary and secondary, and the roughly the same proportion of pupils. So that continues to be so, and it's clear, therefore, that the Catholic sector is thriving and vibrant and has no problem in attracting pupils to its schools. The Catholicity of pupils has remained fairly constant over the years. There's a slight decline visible since 2007, when we first started publishing, but it is very slight and barely outside the limits of tolerance. It remains at about 71% of the pupils in Catholic schools on average nationally. That varies across dioceses, but that's the average figure. And the figure for staff is rather lower than that. It's between 55-56% of the staff in our schools are Catholic, higher in primary than in secondary. It's nearer the 60s in primary and the lower 50s in secondary.
Greg, how important is it that a school's Catholicity comes to the fore, do you think?
I think it's crucial, and it goes to the heart of what the mission of Catholic education in England and Wales is. And I think it's heartening that, as Peter's just mentioned, that the percentage of Catholic pupils in our schools has remained fairly constant over a long period of time. We're not seeing rapid changes. And so I think we go into the 2013 census, the process for which we begin in just over a month's time, with a high level of confidence about Catholic education and also the data on which it's built.
Now, one or two of the things obviously that stand out for me, 74.7% of Catholic primary schools have Ofsted grades of good or outstanding. You must be pleased with that.
We're delighted. Standards, I think, quite rightly, are the top priority for the government in both England and in Wales. And they're putting a lot of resources into ensuring that standards are high. And I think the fact that Catholic schools, generally speaking, are doing at least as well, as is their requirement under canon law, as other schools, is something we take a great deal of confidence from.
Peter.
And in fact, as Greg was hinting there, I think, in fact, they're doing rather better than average in both primary and secondary schools. And the striking thing that comes from the census, once again, is that they achieve better than average standards with a student profile which is very comparable to the national average profile.
Now, we see another statistic that at GCSE level, Catholic schools outperform the national average by 4.9%. Now, that sounds good to me. Is that a very positive thing?
It's incredibly positive, and Peter's absolutely right to pick me up on the point that they're actually doing better. I was alluding to canon law, and I think canon 806 in its second part says that the expectation is that Catholic schools should perform at least as well as other schools in an area. And the truth is, as Peter rightly points out, they're actually doing better and noticeably better. And that's the same for Key Stage 2, and it's true at GCSE as well.
And that is without being selective. That's very important to note.
Now, it's obviously a desirable thing. I'm a parent myself. I have nearly five children in Catholic schools. And it's something that, we as parents are very keen, of course, not just because of our faith, but because the schools are of a decent quality. How do we ensure that we keep that level up?
I think part of this is about ensuring that schools have the best leadership. And the CES is certainly renewing its focus on the leadership of Catholic schools. We're hosting a conference tomorrow on that issue. And there's a huge amount of good work being done in dioceses across England and Wales on leadership and on succession planning. And I think the role of CES isn't to try and replicate that fantastic work that's being done, but rather to harness it and to ensure that best practice is shared as widely as possible. But high standards don't happen by accident. They are a tribute, as I say, partly to the leadership, but partly also to the outstanding work that is done by tens of thousands of teachers every day in our schools. And I mean, I really want to take this opportunity to thank them for their efforts on behalf of the Catholic Church and the children they educate.
Now, it's great to be talking about high standards and maintaining high standards, of course, Peter, but we, as Catholic schools and colleges, have a certain responsibility, do we not, to educate those that perhaps are more in need, that come from lower income backgrounds. We want to obviously be diverse and have a broad and rich ethnic makeup in our schools. How are we performing on that level?
If I can take your last point first, the schools have a broader ethnic mix than schools generally across the country. The figures show that quite categorically. It's true in Wales, as in England. In Wales generally has a less ethnically mixed population than England, but Catholic schools in Wales are much more ethnically mixed than state schools in Wales. That's very striking. The census also gives us very clear evidence from the index of income deprivation affecting children, excuse the mouthful there, but it's an important index. The figures provided to us from the DfE, and we're grateful for the figures, show very clearly that Catholic children come disproportionately from areas of multiple disadvantage. The figures are very clear. I point people to appendices 4.1 and 4.2 of the digest for the detail, but the headline is very clear.
Now, I should say that we'll be carrying the digest and the headline facts and figures online at both catholicnews.org.uk, the Bishop's Conference site, and also the Catholic Education Service site. Greg, I need you to remind me of the URL and our listeners.
It's www.catholiceducation.org.uk.
Great. Well, that's where you will also find a PDF of the census. Now, Greg, this is great, and it's good to hear the positivity, of course, but what does the CES do with these facts and figures? How do you use them to improve things?
They're hugely important to us. We represent the Catholic bishops of England and Wales to the government in Whitehall and also to the Welsh government in Cardiff. And having a robust statistical basis on which to argue your case makes a phenomenal difference. Actually, one of the things we found is that the census and the key facts cards, which are an extrapolation of the census data in concise form, the people they're most popular with, they were originally designed for our bishops as an aide memoir, but actually the people they're most popular with, now we're circulating them more widely, are officials in the Department for Education in London, officials with the Department for Education and Skills in Cardiff, and they it just is incredibly helpful to have this kind of statistical data to hand when making a case to the government. The other reason why this is so helpful is that we debate in the public square. We live in a time of vibrant debate about education and about the place of religion and faith in society. We do face a challenge from secularism, and there is debate about whether or not the state should fund schools of a religious character. Now, being able to point to the high standards, for example, or the fact that our schools are more ethnically diverse than community schools, or the fact that our schools disproportionately serve the poorest communities, are all very important points for us to make in that debate.
Well, let me just stay with you for one second, Greg, and I want to just challenge you a bit and say, well, you know, we do see, and we have the facts and figures to back it up, lots and lots of positivity. Where do we need to pull our socks up as Catholic schools and colleges, do you think?
Well, not all schools, as you would expect, given the size of our sector, well over 2,000 schools in England and Wales, not all of those schools are performing at a standard that we would wish them to be. And that is an area of great focus for the Catholic Education Service. It's an area of great focus for our colleagues in the diocese, in the diocesan education services, and it's a matter of great focus for our colleagues in the government. And one of the things that I think sometimes gets overlooked in this is that we're not a stakeholder in education, we're a partner. We deliver education services to well over 800,000 pupils across England and Wales. And I believe, as a parent, as well as somebody who works for the Catholic Education Service, that every child deserves the best possible education, the best possible start in life. In terms of outcomes for people later on in life, how they perform at school is a matter of pivotal importance. And I think I would speak for everybody involved in Catholic education in saying that we are absolutely determined that we will have the highest possible standards.
A couple of external factors that bear on the sector, very importantly. One is the transport issue. There are a number of authorities are withdrawing the discretionary transport for pupils who are living outside the agreed mileage limits. And that's quite serious for secondary schools in particular, which have a very wide catchment area in many cases. And I know they are very well aware of the problem of maintaining the Catholic education, indeed, for those parents of children who wish to have it. So that's one big issue. Another is the EBAC, for example, where the challenge of maintaining high-profile RE up to age 16 for everybody is a real one, and it puts pressure on the curriculum when there is enormous pressure from outside to attain high standards in the agreed 5 EBAC subject areas. So that's a very big issue, and we encourage our schools to be very positive and very firm in the value of what they do, but they feel, understandably sometimes, that is against the pressures of the time.
And Peter, just remind us what the status is of religious education in the EBAC as it stands now.
It doesn't have any mandatory position at all, as I understand it, despite enormous pressure from many quarters, not just from Catholic educators, but it still remains an option in Key Stage 4, but it's not a mandatory part of the cluster of subjects constituting what will be the E-Baccalaureate.
Well, I don't want to go too far down this angle, Greg, but how then can we maintain the importance of RE?
Well, I think RE is of absolutely crucial importance. It is at the heart of the mission of Catholic schools. For the government in England to exclude religious education from being a core subject under the English Baccalaureate certificate system that they're introducing is, I think, an astonishing decision, and it's one which will not go unchallenged. Along with colleagues, we'll be meeting with officials in the Department for Education later this week to discuss this. But the idea that you can have core subjects such as English and mathematics, which everybody would agree are core subjects, of course, but exclude religious education in Catholic schools is, I think, wholly misguided. And I think that the government will need to think again on this. I'm sure that parliamentarians will be raising this and others, but we'll certainly be pressing the government in Whitehall very, very strongly on it.
Well, it's a hot topic and a good one to raise, most certainly, so we'll keep an eye on that one. A couple of quick fire things I'd like to sort of address at both of you, really. Joint schools, cooperations with the Church of England? Do they work? Are they working well? Are the stats showing that they're performing? Can we retain our unique identity within a setup like that? That's a question. And the other one, I'll say, with the advent of academies, are we seeing an improvement in levels?
I think with the advent of academies, we are at a fairly early stage here. It's interesting, the total number of Catholic academies is now 148. They're split fairly evenly, almost 50-50 between primary and secondary, and they account therefore for about 7% of Catholic schools across England. Of course, the academies only apply in England, they don't apply in Wales. Having said that they only account for 7% of schools in total, I think it's worth pointing out they currently account for 20% of secondary schools. And what we're seeing, I think, is a fairly rapid rate of increase in the Catholic secondary sector. At the moment, Peter will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's probably too early to draw concrete conclusions as to the effect that's having on standards, although I do believe there's no reason to believe that the impact on standards will be adverse.
I agree with that. It's much too early to come to any conclusion about the impact of a change of status on standards. For joint schools, you raise a very interesting question. The number of schools is quite small. I think it's 29 currently, 27 of those being maintained schools. So it's a very small group to analyse, and I think a statistician would say that really any sort of analysis would mean very little of a group so small. But you raise a good question, and we'll go away and think about that, about doing a possible study of standards in joint schools.
Well, I guess when we look at a census such as this, it's, as you said yourself, Peter, off mic, you know, things age within seconds, really, when you're looking at data. But it's very, very positive, and I just do want to finish with the final question, an open question, which is, you know, what is the future for Catholic education? It certainly seems good. It also seems you're not resting on your laurels with this. But how do you both see the future?
There's very strong parental support. I think that is the most positive thing in almost all parts of the country. Schools are oversubscribed. So that must be a very strong pointer to a good future. Steady as she goes, in a way, would be my philosophy. You know, no radical changes. And I think the approach that's been taken, for example, to academy status has been very sensibly prudent in that respect, not rushing into it, but considering what the options are and then making evidence-based decisions.
I think Peter's point is the most important there. It's about parental choice, and I think the time to worry is when the schools are empty, and that's very much not the case. Most of our schools are full or oversubscribed, and that is in a sense parents voting with their feet. But I also think that it's true that we face the future with confidence. We enter 2013 knowing that our sector is strong, it's successful, it's got high standards, so all of those things are incredibly positive. But I think Peter's other point, which is there must be no resting on laurels, the drive for high standards is absolutely crucial. And I think the last point, maybe it should be the first point, but I'm very happy to end on it, is that let's not forget what the core mission of a Catholic school is. It's about evangelisation. And it's worth bearing in mind in the history of the church in England and Wales that after the restoration of the hierarchy in the middle of the 19th century, the first thing that the Catholic Church did, even before it built churches, was to build schools. They're at the heart of Catholic communities.
A very good point there. Now, we could really go on for hours and hours, and I'm finding it fascinating, and we should do more with education. So I'd like to invite you both back, as and when you can, to give us updates on all these very, very important issues. But for now, who just finished speaking there, that's Greg Pope, Deputy Director of the Catholic Education Service, and Peter Irvin as well. Thank you ever so much for coming in, Peter.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more on catholicnews.org.uk in the very near future.